I'm John Perry, and this is Selected Prose. Hey, everybody, I hope you're having a good week. On my end, they've erected this gigantic amenity building at the end of our street, which, whatever, but then they built these balconies on it, and the way that the wind comes in off of the East River, it's like a constant high pitch whistling sound that has driven the whole neighborhood to insanity. It's just like all hours of the day and night, neighbors furious, particularly neighbor Joe. The other day I was coming home from a walk and I found him in the middle of the street just staring up at this building in like complete desperation and agony. And I was like, Joe, what are you doing, man? And he was like, I'm just taking in the freaking music. And I don't know, we're all just out of sorts, really. But anyway, very excited about today's episode. I got to speak with Grammy-nominated musician Courtney Marie Andrews, who just released her debut work of poetry called Old Monarch. I read it. I loved it. I kind of want to dub her like the Mary Oliver of the desert. It's a really beautiful thing that she created, and we talk about it at length. And lucky for us, she read two of her poems, and we talk about those. Kind of get into where they come from, how she did it, and a lot more. Really lovely human being to speak with, and I was really honored for the opportunity. If you don't know her music, I would definitely recommend that you become acquainted with it. And if you don't know her poetry, well, you're about to learn a little bit about it. And really, again, I couldn't recommend Old Monarch highly enough. I enjoyed every second I spent with it. And enjoyed every second I spent with Courtney. So links to everything in the bio, as always. I'd also encourage you to support Courtney on Patreon. Some fun perks come with that in terms of poetry readings and online concerts and stuff. So that too is in the bio. And yeah, looking forward to hearing all your thoughts on this episode. And hope you have as much fun listening to Courtney as I did. So without further ado, Courtney Marie Andrews. Welcome. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
Yeah, where are you zooming in from?
I'm actually in St. Augustine, Florida right now. I don't live here, but my entire family is vaxxed and my aunt lives here. So we're kind of doing like a small get together.
Cool. That's great. Again, you're probably excited to play music again. I don't know. How's that been going?
I'm so excited. I'm playing my first show in over a year next month.
Where are you going to play?
Crazy. Nashville, this place called Basement East. It's like cool. A social distanced, you know, like 100 people and like a 600 person venue kind of vibe, you know.
That sounds great.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Are you nervous?
Yeah, I'm actually really nervous. I'm just worried it's probably going to inevitably feel rusty just because, you know, we went from like spending year every day on the road playing music to like not doing it for a year. So I am nervous, but I'm so excited to do it again. So
yeah, I have to tell you before we talk about Old Monarch too, I was like, I've been listening to a lot of your music. I mean, I've listened to your music for quite some time, but I went back to On My Page and I have to say, Left-Handed Angel to me is like, it's one of those songs that I will listen to millions of times before.
That's amazing. But, aww, yeah, thank you.
Very good. So
I haven't heard about, it's been so long since I played any of the songs off that record. So it's nice to hear.
Yeah, I knew it was an older one, but yeah, for what it's worth.
Aw, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And then, so I finished this, Old Monarch.
Nice.
I absolutely loved it, and I have so many questions, but you know, first thing is I just want to see like how you're feeling about putting out a book for the first time. What's that like?
Long dream. I've written poetry honestly longer than I've written songs because I didn't realize that you could be a songwriter. I love to sing and I love to write separately, and didn't realize that when I was writing poems that you could sing poems and make them songs. But I've always wanted to write a book. It's been a lifelong dream. So, and I'm such a book nerd. I love reading. I read every day. So it feels so exciting to me. Yeah.
Some of the poems in Old Monarch, you say in song form. So I was actually pretty curious about how you like distinguish between whether you're going to like try to put this to music or leave it in a poetry collection. Like, how's that decision made?
For me, it's a rhythm AB kind of section. Like the ones that I say in song form, I think there's one in particular I say in song form, Master of Denial. Yeah, I wrote that. That feels to me like if I were to write, you know, some chords, and you know, it has a chorus, it's very lyrical, it rhymes, you know. Yeah, I feel like it's kind of it's a lyrical vibe. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, so. Yeah, that makes sense. Have you ever like written a poem and then you're like, this needs to be a song, or vice versa?
Yeah. I feel like I've mostly yes, definitely both. Although my mindset on both are completely different. Like when I'm in poetry mode, I feel like stranger, more mysterious things end up becoming a poem. Whereas a song is definitely like a title that you get in your head first.
Hmm.
Whereas poems okay. aren't really title based, you know?
Yeah, it's like a struggle to come up with one sometimes.
Yeah.
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 So where did you grow up, just having read this, like, and not knowing too much, or maybe listeners won't know too much about your personal life, but I would guess in the American Southwest, or you spent a lot of time there?
I'm born and raised in Phoenix, Arizona. Yeah. Mm. So the first section of Old Monarch is based primarily in the Sonoran Desert. Mm-hmm. So.
Are these older poems, or when were these written?
These were all written the span of like 3 years. So from, you know, 2017 to 2020. A lot was written in 2020. I had started writing this book in 2019, and it was taking me a long time just because I was touring all the time and just didn't have as much focus on it. And because I was in this like solitary place, just being off the road, I put kind of all of my focus into the book.
So was it nostalgic writing? I mean, the desert is such a mysterious, it's a huge yeah. life regret of mine that I have never stepped foot in a desert.
You haven't?
No.
Oh my gosh. You have to go to Sonoran.
I have this like such a romantic image of it in my mind. And a lot of these poems really brought that out. And it's like, it must be pretty, like, what was your childhood like? I mean, it seems like you were really left to your own devices if these poems are at all autobiographical, and you really like, it must be a really nostalgic thing to kind of like revisit the desert.
It's interesting growing up in the desert and then leaving and kind of pondering what it is like to grow up in such a vast dirt pit.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I kind of liken it to, it's really this just vast space that you can fill with so much creativity and so much learning and so much discovery. I really think it has something to do with the feeling of vastness that makes it easy to create in. It's such an inspiring place for that reason. It's endlessly mysterious. And I'm so inspired by it now that I'm older and look back on my childhood and think about roaming the desert as a kid. And, you know, mm-hmm. I think I talk about searching for saguaro bones and cholla bones and, you know, painting them different colors. And my mother was a artist. I grew up around a lot of painters. So I just kind of feel very inspired by it now that I'm away from it. I mm-hmm. think when you grow up in it, it's like you kind of want to leave. You want to leave this dirt pit. But when you're away, you're like, wow, the Sonoran is such an interesting place to grow up. And when I take friends who have never been there through, you know, Arizona, they're just like, it's Mars. What is this place?
Yeah, I feel like you'd be constantly reminded too, just of time passing and
it's a very reflective place. I feel like people go there to reflect on their lives a lot for a reason. You know, it's so quiet and yeah, there's a lot of space to think. So
Yeah, it's well, it really comes through in this collection. And so it's the Old Monarch is separated into like sections. So Sonoran Milkweed and Longing in Flight, and then Eucalyptus Tree. And I'm kind of wondering how that structure came about, if it has any particular meaning for you.
Well, I became very drawn to monarch butterflies. I randomly was at a monarch butterfly museum, or I should say sanctuary. And
where was that, by the way?
It was in Arizona,
actually. Oh, it was in Arizona. Okay.
Yeah, I was visiting my parents, and my dad is a huge nature lover, and you know, we went to this butterfly garden and they had this whole section on monarchs. And I just resonated so much. They had this like documentary in this, you know, this back room of this sanctuary. And I just resonated so deeply with the monarch and its journey, and how it is just this tiny little insect that flies so long just to, and it goes through so many transformative periods. And I started to see them everywhere, and I just became completely enamored and felt, it just resonated so much with like the monarch story. And so the three sections are, you know, I guess you would say that I'm the old monarch, and the three sections are kind of, the first section of poems is my childhood in Arizona. And then the second is longing, moving, growing up, coming of age, 20s, 30s, like learning. And yeah, and then the last one's kind of more metaphysical, like poems thinking about death. And you get to the garden, you get there, and you look back on your life and you kind of ponder what it's all for.
I felt the death near the end, but I particularly liked, I'm going to find it because I marked it. There's so many in here, by the way, just while I'm going through it, that I absolutely love.
Oh,
and
thank you.
I think I was talking with Haley about Mary Oliver.
Yeah.
Or, you know, totally have your own voice, but definitely felt some of her presence in the way that you describe nature. And it is, it was in How to Grieve, which is one that I particularly love, and ended with, I'm here to prove Parmenides wrong. Love and death are inevitable. And at the end of each, I am moving. And that kind of just felt like very hopeful, you know?
Yeah.
Hopefully, yeah, we're moving after death.
Yeah, yeah. I want to feel transcending both, and I think that's kind of where the movement comes in. But yeah, that's I'm of course. I mean, Mary Oliver is like the Bob Dylan of poetry in my mind.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like, okay, we all love Mary Oliver. You know, like we all
very
love
true.
Bob Dylan. Like, it's so. But she's so worth talking about and so worth championing. And I'm of course such a huge fan. Before this interview, I was actually just talking about her. And yeah, she comes up in conversations a lot for me.
I don't know if you've ever read The Art of, I think it's just called The Art of Poetry, but she kind of like walks you through.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah. I really resonate with her. Before I even read her, I feel like we had very similar processes, and it's just walking. That's my process for writing. I will walk for miles a day, and that's where I usually get most of my poems, most of my songs. And I wrote a lot of these poems when I was living in the woods in Washington State, in this little town called Duval. I wrote a majority of this book, honestly. This is such a crazy story. I had written a lot of these poems on the road and, you know, in between tours and that sort of thing. But I was visiting a friend on the Cape in Massachusetts, and I just really didn't want to go back to Nashville, and I could feel I wanted to stay, and I was like manifesting a writing retreat just in my mind. I'm like, there's a writing retreat on the Cape. Lo and behold, a couple days later, my manager's like, we found you a writing retreat on Nantucket. And I was like, what? I feel like I really manifested it. And I went to Nantucket, and I meant to go there for a week to finish this book. And I stayed for 2 months and finished a lot of these poems in Nantucket. And there was trails all around. It was like in the middle of the woods. The beach was like a 10-minute walk away. And I would just walk the trails for like 3 hours every morning. And that's where I got a lot of these poems.
That really sounds like the perfect conditions
for writing. it's like a little, it's a little too on the nose, maybe.
No, it's like, I think it's like what everybody dreams of for that time, at least to.
Yeah, it's very much stamped. I mean, it's so funny because so many of the poems are about the Sonoran, but I was writing them on an island out at sea. Which it's perfect. You long for your childhood home or whatever on an island out at sea.
Mm-hmm.
Desert. It's kind of funny, you know, you long for the thing you're not experiencing. So
did you find anything you had to overcome to get it done?
Honestly, I really hate to say this, but the pandemic was in some ways for this book kind of the catalyst, because like I said, I was on the road so much and I really feel like to be in the space for poetry, you have to have a lot of solitude. You have to have a lot of alone time, a lot of processing and thinking about your life. And, you know, having this space and time was the best thing that could have happened. I don't know if I would have finished it. So yeah, just having that solitude and having that time to reflect was really huge. And I think that it's going to be important for me in the future moving on to always make sure I have that. Yeah, I think that that's the space and time is really the most important part.
Mm-hmm.
An obstacle in our crazy, busy, fast world that's about to impend on us once again.
I know. It's like, it's a weird feeling because I'm sure you understand, but there was like this, yeah, as you were just describing, there was some sort of peace that came with this. And some people hoped maybe we wouldn't all go back to work or something and it would change society. But it's like friends and family are filing back into the offices. And for you, you know, concert halls are going to be full again. And are you nervous, or are you like for not for the music, but for everything coming back? Or are you like ready for it?
I think that I just really want, you know, I feel like a lot of people learned a lot about themselves and sitting with ourselves, not all these distractions and stuff. And I just really hope we keep being intentional. I feel like a lot of my time with people recently has been so intentional. It's been so thoughtful and slow. And I really don't want that to get lost again.
Yeah.
In our crazy world. I really hope that we, you know, at least for myself to really maintain that kind of Zen quality. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've learned in such a scary and sad time as well, you know, not negating the fact that it was such a horrible year in so many mm-hmm. ways. In other ways, the slowness was really necessary. I think a lot of people looked inward. You know,
I'm curious, as someone who's never like toured or anything, what do you think you'll be able to maintain that Zen? Like, what's it like on the road, you know, for your writing and for your mental health, I suppose? Like,
it's pretty crazy. Yeah. You know,
everything I've heard about it, it does sound very crazy.
I didn't actually realize how crazy it was until I started to look at my schedule coming up. Because they're really projecting that we're going to be able to tour by this fall. And I just, it's crazy. So, you know, you, especially if you're not on a tour bus, if you're still doing band tours and that sort of thing, which I am primarily doing, and you drive anywhere from like 4 to 10 hours a day, you get to the venue, you sound check immediately, you get dinner right after you sound check, you play your show, you meet the fans, you go to the hotel room, you sleep, and you do it over and over again. And you can do that for 9 months out of the year. You know?
Yeah, that's pretty much the opposite. In terms of like writing, that sounds like the opposite of being on an island and walking.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, yeah. And you're in a van and with a lot of different energies, which are all lovely and awesome. But it's not, you know, for me, when I'm in a poetry headspace, I need a lot of like clean energy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just full on focus, like the woods, you mm-hmm. know, the row, you know, just like full on.
The long
cliche, yeah. Just cliche poet brain. As much as I'd love to just rap about in the back of the van with a with a bunch of smells and strength energies from the drinking the night before. You know, I it's just not quite the space.
Well, drinking is good for poetry too.
It is. It is. Yeah, actually, I did drink a lot of wine when I wrote this book. So
there you go.
Yeah. Drinking can be good for all writing occasions.
Oh, it can. Yeah. Write drunk and it's sober. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This one thing at a time, I guess, in terms of your literary career. But so this is coming, Old Monarch's coming out April 6th, right?
Yes.
And, you know, I imagine you're still writing. I mean, obviously you're still writing songs, but are you sort of like giving yourself a break now?
I don't feel like I'm ever giving myself a break. I have
from poetry, maybe.
From poetry, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I always have to be doing something. Yes, yeah. I am. I am. If I have a poem idea, I always write it down. So I definitely have like a handful I've written in the past few months.
Okay.
But I'm definitely more in songwriting right now because I'm going to the studio soon, and so I've just been kind of geared back into that. And I really hope I find this beautiful symbiotic relationship where I release a book and then I do songs and then I kind of ping back and forth. That would be my ideal.
And your so that would be your ideal world. You wouldn't necessarily choose one over the other.
No, I love both. Mm-hmm. I've always, like I said earlier, being an author has been one of my dreams. It's to be a singer and an author. And so this is, in my ideal world, I would do both.
Yeah, you have a line in one of your poems too, where it's essentially like losing certain dreams so that you can like find freedom. I wish I could find. I don't want to like spend too much time looking through the book or ruining the poems for people who are gonna read it. Yeah. But it's like, when did you decide that you were like going to be an artist?
I didn't ever think of it as in. Like in terms of career, but since I was a child, I wanted to be an artist. I mean, I kind of came out of the womb singing and writing poems. Those are the first two things I wanted to do. I would write poetry and sing musicals, and I wouldn't stop. And I was that annoying kid that would not shut up about whatever song or whatever words I had written. And I think, you know, I think when I was about 15, 16, practicality started to kick me in the butt a little bit, and people talked about college, and I thought I wanted to be a philosopher, which kind of would be in tandem with my poetry. And I thought I would go to college for philosophy. And that didn't work out because I started listening to feminist punk music and playing music, you know, around coffee shops and bars in Phoenix. And I think around that time, 15, 16, I was like, oh, this is something you could, you know, somebody gave me $20 to play some songs. And I was like, oh, you could like make money doing this. I didn't know. So, you know, I think that's kind of the classic artist thing is like, you do the art first and you're shocked. I think, you know, artists who are lifers, as we call them in the music business, people who do it for life, they just play music and they're like shocked when they get paid $20, you know, it's like, whoa, I got $20. I just do this. This is what I do, you know?
Yeah.
So it took a while to like know it was going to be a quote unquote career or whatever. I just knew I just had to do it every day. It was something, it was like eating food, you know, you just have to, you know, eat a banana to survive. You have to write a poem or sing a song.
Do you remember the first song you ever wrote, like as a kid?
Yeah, I would, like I said, I was in a feminist punk band. We were called Massacre in a Miniskirt. And great. Yeah, besides us trying to just play Bikini Kill and Violent Femme songs, we decided we should probably have our own songs as well. And so we made this pact at one of our rehearsals that we'd all go home and write our own songs. And I was the only one that came back. I wrote a song that night and they're like, wow, it's pretty good. It was called Loser. Very angsty.
Yep.
And yeah, it was called Loser. And then as soon as I wrote that song, it was just like, oh, damn, it broken. You know, I just couldn't stop. And I was like, this is it. Yeah.
So what came after Massacre in a Miniskirt? Did you go solo? Did you keep starting bands?
I went solo. Nice. Yeah, of course. Classic move, you know. Yeah. You start the band, then you go solo.
I'm the only one who did the songwriting assignment, so I'm just going to do this on my own.
Exactly. Well, I just couldn't stop. I had to, it became a daily ritual. I had to write every day. I got a really crappy recording set up on a computer that was the size of my head, you know, and I just recorded on this Walmart mic and made little demos, you know, in my mom's living room. And yeah, I just couldn't stop.
I absolutely want to focus on your writing, but we've got to talk about your music a little bit too, you know, so I got to get
it. It's
I was actually, so I know that you were nominated for a Grammy, which congratulations belatedly.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's very cool. I just found myself curious, like, where you were when someone told you that. I always wonder, like, when someone finds out that they've been nominated, and it doesn't sound, you know, like you were saying, you play music and you're shocked when somebody gives you $20, so you don't seem like the type of person who's like set out to win a Grammy, but I would love to imagine the situation where you were like informed of the for the first time.
That's so funny you say that, because you kind of hit the nail on the head. I didn't even know it was like Grammy nomination day, and I was in bed and I got all these texts of classic pandemic style. I got all these texts. It was like, congrats. And I was like, for what? And I text my manager, like, people are saying congrats to me.
He's like, did my tweet go viral or something?
Yeah. He's like, oh, you were nominated for a Grammy. I'm like, oh, cool. I didn't even know that that was a thing.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, I didn't know. And then, you know, I lived alone in 2020. So I was just in my bed, like, here I am, you know, just another day on earth.
Yeah, just another normal day on earth getting nominated. Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, that's funny. So did you, what did that look like in 2020 then? I mean, did you like go to the ceremony? Was it all like online?
It was Zoom.
Yeah. Zoom.
Yeah. We were in this meeting room, in a backstage meeting room, right before my category went up. Billie Eilish won an award and was also in Zoom.
Mm.
And then, you know, they
were you guys talking? Up.
No, it's just like a bunch of artists in this Zoom room. You couldn't talk or anything. It was just like completely silent.
Everyone's muted.
So strange. Oh, right. Everybody's in their homes. You know, it was so wild.
Yeah.
But also so beautiful in another way, because I had I had some friends over for a bonfire, and we all kind of wore our Grammy outfits or whatever, and it was just sweet. It was like it wasn't what you would expect a normal Grammys day to look like. But honestly, we had such a nice time, and I was just honored to be nominated. And
yeah, who would want a normal Grammy ceremony when you could have a weird one, you know? It's more fun.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool. And that was for the album Old Flowers?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So what's your thing with calling things old? I'm curious. Is it the desert?
It's the desert. And I just also think, you know, old can be synonymous with wise in my own head.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not that I am wise or I'm claiming to be, it's more that I desire to gain a wisdom that is old as the desert.
Yeah. You know? It's the philosopher in you.
Yeah.
There's a lot of philosophical concepts in this collection, and you talk about some ancient Greeks and stuff. I mean, is it a hobby that you've had? Is it something you're able to like continue doing, like reading philosophy? Or I mean, it's kind of an exhausting. I studied it in college, actually, and it's kind of an exhausting thing to like do when you're touring, I would imagine, because reading a book of philosophy is exhausting in and of itself sometimes.
Well, it's just endless questions.
Right.
You
right.
Continue to ask more questions
and examining them and
yeah. Yes, I'm a huge philosophy fan. Like I said, I thought that I was going to go to college for philosophy at one point. And yeah, it's a endless well of questions.
And like no one has ever had any of those questions answered.
Exactly. But that's the whole point.
It is the whole point. Yeah.
Kind of maddening. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I feel like I definitely love to ask the questions. I'm endlessly curious. And I'm a huge fan of philosophy. Mm-hmm. And I think I do naturally just kind of incorporate it in my poems. Maybe that's just a part of my inherent personality that I don't even know why it's there.
Yeah.
Which is classically philosophical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. No, it's very refreshing to read. I don't know. I feel like a lot of it's almost astounding to me that people aren't always thinking about these problems.
Yeah. I think that's goes back to the How to Grieve poem where I at the end of each, I'm moving,
mm-hmm.
moving and questioning and always learning. I feel like if I ever got to a point in my life where I stopped learning, I would be really concerned,
mm-hmm.
you know, and questioning. I think that's one of the most beautiful things you can do in life to learn and to grow is to constantly ask questions mm-hmm. and look at yourself in the mirror and ask yourself where you are in the world and mm-hmm. where everybody else is. And yeah, I think that's, it's important.
Do you have any questions that are particularly bugging you lately?
I think a lot of my questions right now are involving our transition into, you know, quote unquote normal or whatever normal used to look like, and how to maintain the centeredness that, you know, I feel like was gained by so much solitude.
Mm-hmm.
So those are my questions.
Yeah.
How do we stay present and how do we not become zombified? I feel like in this very fast paced world, we can all become kind of zombie people.
For sure.
Yeah. And I just really don't want to do that. I want to be really intentional.
Yes. I don't miss the days of a zombie person.
No. And I didn't even know that I was a zombie person until I was not.
Yeah, so like it's you just hate routine, right? That's probably
not even when you get into routine, you can get really used to certain ways of acting.
Mm-hmm.
You can start checking your phone every 10 minutes or whatever. You know what I mean? You can, especially when you're on tour, you can get into this routine that just numbs you and mm-hmm. numbs everything happening. And it's like that's the opposite of what you want to do as an artist. You have to feel everything.
Yeah, it doesn't leave a lot of room for creation, I would imagine.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Yeah, those are the things I've been questioning. How to maintain a sovereign centeredness
mm-hmm.
and intention.
Okay, so something I really wanted to ask you is if you had a favorite of your poems, or maybe like a couple favorites. Like, is there any poem in here that is like, you know, your favorite child?
I am very proud of this poem called The Houses We Build and Regarding Nostalgia.
The Houses We Build, page 63. Yeah. Oh, I starred it. See?
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's my system.
Yeah. Good system.
Yeah. So why is it, you know, actually, if you don't mind, we do this thing on Selected Prose called like a reading series. Where we have mm-hmm. people, you know, read a story or a poem or something. Would you be up for that?
Yeah, I would love that.
Okay. Anyone you want to read would be fine. Or if you want to read two, that'd be even better. But whatever you want to do.
I would love to. So I was thinking of reading Sisters Under the Pink Moon. And I could do The Houses We Build. Because
that'd be awesome.
Perfect. And the pink... I kind of wanted to choose this one because I think the full moon coming up on Sunday is maybe the pink moon, or the one in April is. I can't. It's either the March or April one. Yeah.
This will be your offering to the pink moon that's coming.
Exactly. Okay. Should I go for it?
Yeah. Sure. Go for it.
Okay. Perfect. Sisters Under the Pink Moon. Under the pink moon, sisters in arms. Chewing dried figs, sprouts, ginger, chocolates, tiny kisses on barks, tears flowing, always tears, but not always a sad kind. Mud caked like boots on tomorrows, below skinny dipping magnolias in the winter time, setting intentions upon rogue leaves in the campfire. May tonight transform us. Come spring, may we find lily white flowers, pure as a newborn, childhood dreams without training wheels. May we release the ashes as we close chapters. May we bloom, may we prosper. May we embrace the oak of our womanhood. No suitor can hold a candle to his sister's love. Between our squishy thighs rest all our secrets, natural beauty, imperfections, painful truths, feminine magic, loose talk, complexities, understanding, belonging. Beside Luna's lust figure, we breathe in a smoky silence as we kindle our uncertainty with a branch.
I love it.
Thank you.
It's really, really beautiful. What's you don't feel like you have to do this because it's not a question anybody likes answering, but is there you know, a particular image or memory or something that you were reflecting on when you wrote that?
Yes.
Don't feel that you have to deconstruct it too. You could just say, I don't want to.
I don't have to deconstruct it, but I, yes, there okay. was a, for an entire year, me and a group of women gathered under every full moon. And so it's for them.
Cool.
Yeah. We actually even, this is so silly, but we even got a tattoo called La Luna.
What is it, say La Luna under it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, we would really set our intentions under every full moon.
Where was it? Was this in Arizona or?
No, this is actually in Nashville.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah, for them.
All right, one more?
One more. The houses we build. I am here to tell you that I have accepted good things. I remember being a cynic once, denying myself the sip of holy wine. While the birds were singing in their nests, I waited for the world to end. Mindlessly, I accepted the dances, the roses, pink moons, and sacred now. We can so easily turn every joyous thing into some perilous warning sign. Our pasts are cruel carpenters, hammering away, building walls around our hearts, until every corner is cluttered with cobwebs and childhood trauma. I am here to tell you I grabbed the broom, the rusted old shovel, and did the work. I no longer wait for lovers to leave or for the earth to rattle beneath me. I am here to tell you what a relief it is.
That's great. So I also wanted to talk to you about, like, if you have a favorite author or a couple favorite authors.
Poets or authors?
Just anyone. Like, and like who you're reading now, maybe.
I guess say something. Well, man, poetry wise, I would say, obviously we've already covered Mary Oliver, but I'm a huge Jack Gilbert fan. And I think he's one of the best poets. One of the best American poets. As far as like fiction writers, I'm a huge Gabriel Garcia Marquez fan, huge Zadie Smith fan, huge Steinbeck fan.
have you read East of Eden?
Of course.
Yeah, it's like
top five.
Oh my God, it's so good. I remember so like good. Reading it reluctantly. I was like, oh, whatever. And I just couldn't believe how great it was.
It's just an age-old classic story. I mean, obviously, it was kind of loosely based on the story of Cain and Abel, which is, you know, from the Bible.
Yeah.
But Steinbeck has this cool, like, dirty twist, you know, or whatever. It's just dark.
A hot take on Genesis, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I love Steinbeck. Steinbeck for me is up there. You know, mm-hmm. just he has that thing where he's like simple language, but the characters are so developed and so real and just says such profound things, but in the context of such simplicity. And I'm a huge Steinbeck fan.
I haven't read it, and I haven't read East of Eden in so long, but I've read books 2 weeks ago where I've forgotten all the characters, but I'll never forget, like, Samuel.
Sam. Oh, my God.
I mean,
my favorite fiction character of all time. He's kind of like, he's the person everybody relies on and loves, but it's also kind of dark. And yeah, also recently, I can't believe it's taken me this long to get around to her, but Annie Dillard is just blowing my mind.
I've actually never read her, so.
Oh man.
You have to. What's she like?
She's amazing. Just unusual sentence structure and everything, but so good. The Pilgrimage at Tinker Creek. It's just. It's really beautiful literature. You should really check it out.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well. What advice would you give to somebody if they were, like, going to set out to write their first poetry collection?
As somebody who's just released their first, I feel so unprepared to give advice. But if I was to give advice, if I were to give advice,
you're actually like more prepared because it's like you just.
No, I know you're right. Just do it.
Yeah,
That's. Honestly, that's the advice I would give most people. But also, don't be afraid to look inward and to be self-critical, you know, and to really ask yourself, what am I trying to say? I think one of the things that I learned the most while writing this book is the balance between simplicity and mystery. I think poetry always has to have this slight element of mystery to keep you kind of hungry. And I would say to just try and really ask yourself those questions, you know.
Yeah.
Ask yourself questions.
Be honest with yourself, which I think is tough to do.
Be honest with yourself and don't be afraid to, like, strive for something more or different and just do it. I mean, Nike was right when they came up with that slogan. I mean, it really is so much, so much of it is just doing the thing, you know. I think Bukowski, it's definitely a paraphrase, but he had once said, like, writers will write. They'll write if they work 12-hour shifts at a bar. They will write if they are on an airplane every day to their next show. Writers are going to write. And maybe I got the beeline with this so much space and time on this book of poems, but I would have written anyway, and it might have taken longer, but I would have continued to write. And I think it's really important that you just write.
Yeah. Even in the van with all those smells.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Even the tornado of smells has, you know, an eye.
I want to pry into that more, but, you know,
it's in peace.
Yeah. Well, okay. So it's coming out April 6th. That's awesome. Are you doing, like, a book launch or anything?
I am. I'm pairing with The Bookshop in Nashville, which is this great independent bookstore that I love and adore. And we're doing a book launch there.
That's awesome.
Virtually.
Virtually?
Yeah.
Well, are there tickets available and stuff?
I think so.
Cool.
I wish I knew more of
how. Yeah, yeah. Let them handle it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very exciting.
Perfect.
Yeah,
thank you.
Very excited. It's very exciting. I'm very happy for it to be out in the world. It's like one of my favorite reads of the year, so it's really awesome.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, I'll read it again and again. Thanks for making it and coming on the podcast. It was so so great to have you.
Thank you. It was so great to be on this podcast. I'm so excited.
I hope you enjoy your time with your family.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
I hope you have a lovely time with your plant in Brooklyn.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that whistling the whole time, by any chance?
No, does your plant whistle?
Yeah, it's just this perpetual. We live, like, I'm in. I don't know how much you know Brooklyn, but I'm close to the river, like the East River, and it was this really quiet, really quiet street with, like, a couple small brownstones, and then they built this just gigantic skyscraper with, like, balconies.
Oh no!
Like a modern housing complex, and the wind coming off the river, it's like, people can't sleep on this street anymore because it's like a constant high-pitched whistling. It's like the most insulting, like, gentrification moment of not that I'm not a gentrifier, but yeah, it's like it's so loud.
That's so funny you say that. That is such a Gabriel Garcia Marquez thing. That would be in a Gabriel Garcia Marquez. That would be in 100 Years of Solitude.
Yeah, like this totally like absurd, like unnecessary suffering that has been caused by development.
Yes, yes. That is like literally textbook 100 Years of Solitude. Like the entire town gets insomnia or whatever. Yeah.
That's what we're all dealing with. I bought a wind chime to drown it out, but I was just like, before you came on, I was like, I can hear the damn whistling like in the recordings.
Oh, no.
All right, good. So I'll get it out of there anyway. But, yeah.
Sounds great. Thank you, Jonathan.
Cool. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend. Take care. You too. Bye.
Bye.
All right, everybody, that was Courtney Marie Andrews. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for your support. If you enjoyed the episode, if you could leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And, you know, as always, follow us on Twitter at Selected Pros. We've got some great interviews in the coming week, so I'm really excited to share those with you in the near future. Anyway, enjoy the weather. Have a good weekend. Talk to you soon.